Hey there, podcast listeners. This is Justin from Beyond the Uniform. My goal is to give tools to active duty military personnel to help them navigate their transition to a civilian career. I do that each week by interviewing veterans about what they do, what their life is like, advice for others choosing to follow in their footsteps, basically giving you a painting of what it's like on the other side. This week, I'm really excited to be talking to Tim Shaw. He is an incredible person. Not only did he do his JD MBA, law school and business school simultaneously at Stanford, one of the reasons why this interview is so great for every single person on active duty military personnel is that he co-founded a nonprofit called Service to School. And he'll talk all about it, but this is a free resource, 100% free coaching for anyone, any veteran. Whether you're thinking of applying to undergrad, law school, med school, business school, whatever you want to do in the world of education, they will pair you up with another veteran with your same background who will coach you through interviewing, resumes, applications, where to apply, and how to get in. It is an extraordinary organization, and really happy to hear Tim walk through not just his experience on his own educational front, sharing advice on how to get into top law schools and business schools, but sharing experience that he's seen from helping hundreds of people get into their ideal schools. So I think this is a great interview for officer, enlisted, any military background. There's not a single person who wouldn't benefit from this. So without further ado, here's Tim. Yeah, thanks, Tim. I really appreciate your time on this. I've been looking forward to speaking with you and excited to learn more about your background.
Sure. So at a high level, born and raised Tallahassee, Florida, for what it's worth, grandfather fought in World War II for the Nationalists, not the Communists, and fought with Americans. And then my parents fled to Taiwan. They came to grad school in the 70s in Florida. And then they, my mom's a chemical engineer, worked at a hospital. My dad's a civil engineer, worked for the Department of Transportation for Florida. Born and raised in Tallahassee, went to West Point in 2000 before 9/11. So 9/11 happened my sophomore year, as they like to call a yuck year. In 2004, graduated, went infantry active duty, spent 6 years roughly, couple deployments to Iraq, then went to Stanford for grad school, and then finished that in 2014, and then now I live and work in San Francisco.
Awesome. Well, you are being humble. What I've seen from your background, you're a man who doesn't like to be busy, because not only did you do your Juris Doctorate and law degree at Stanford, you did your MBA as well. You did that JD MBA program. You actually started two different companies while you were there. Daily Dish was acquired by Stanford Daily, and the Service to School is one of the things I'm really excited to talk to you about. So when I reached out, I kind of feel like a little bit like a kid in a candy store, because there's so many different things between your education, your internships, and your work experience. There's so many things I would love to pick into. Yes, I'll try and use the time as judiciously as possible.
Cool.
So I guess starting off, I'm always curious to know at what point you knew you were going to leave the Army and how you approached that decision.
Sure. So it was probably during the second deployment, which was 14 months long. I was married at that time. And a lot of what I wanted to do, I got to do, fortunately, in the military. And that's be a platoon leader, that's go on a couple of deployments, that's see what the Army is about, have good leaders. So a combination of reasons. One is not wanting to be away from family, and knowing that I was going to have a family and have kids. It's difficult. And so I really applaud and admire the military families who make that sacrifice, because I personally wasn't willing to do that. So it brings that home even more. And then two is just wanting to diversify my life experiences. So wanting to see what the civilian world was about, being a bit tired of the military bureaucracy. There are aspects of it that are just frustrating, like why does this take 20 signatures and then 10 weeks? And so I think a combination of family, hitting the career things I wanted to do in the military and seeing what else was out there, and trying to be liberated from somewhat of a bureaucratic nature of the DOD is what pushed me out of the military.
Yep. And when you did make that decision, so you jumped straight from there into school, how did you decide on pursuing more education versus going into industry? And then how did you specifically decide to do the JD MBA program?
Sure. So this answer is something that a fair number of veterans I talked to, I've told them, and also this might seem kind of rehearsed, but it's not. So it's kind of unscripted in the sense that my parents are the typical Asian first generation, and so they're like, hey, you know, you should get some education. I'm the last of three kids, so I'm like, no, I'll do what I want. And so my initial inclination leaving the military is I don't need education. I've got hustle. I've got ambition. I've got some smarts, at least, you know, when you're a young guy, you think you do. And so I didn't want to go back to school. I wanted to just go and start, as guys say, start crushing it. Everyone rationalizes everything. Looking back, you rationalize and say, this makes sense. I do think, even with that rationalization factor involved, that going to grad school is a good thing, and that my parents advising me to get a graduate degree was a good thing. I see, and why do I make that comparison? I would say I see some of my classmates who didn't go to grad school, and I feel like for some of them, I don't think they have it's not that they don't have as many opportunities, it's that upon leaving grad school, they didn't have as many opportunities. So grad school gives that additional shine and luster that I feel many veterans could use, and gives them the opportunity to take 2 years to go and survey the landscape in terms of finance, consulting, retail, tech, you name it. And it's not a career blemish, right? If you were just take 2 years to go explore things, people would be like, what are you doing? But if you do it with an MBA degree, suddenly there's some validation there. So I ended up listening to my parents, which was a good thing. And I initially actually first applied to law school. And I did that, not because I have a grand plan, but more my brother and sister are doctors. My mom was like, hey, we need a lawyer in the family to be the insurance person. So went to apply to law school. And then the second I got into law school, I figured, why not do a JD MBA? My West Point classmate and one of my best friends, Dan Arshenko, did a JD MBA at Vanderbilt. And he was like, hey, it was a great experience. So applied to that. Very fortunately, thankfully, got into the joint program. It was 4 years long. I wish it was only 3 years long. I actually think, if anything, four is long. And now that I'm out and about in, quote-unquote, the real world, the civilian world, I see what a difference a year makes, a huge difference. A 1 year in the civilian world, like in terms of like momentum cycle and things you get done, is like 3x what you do in grad school. And I marinated too long in grad school. 4 years is just way too long. So that's one regret. I think, you know, that's my grad school story.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree. And I think it's interesting that the reset button component of grad school is interesting, where people not just from the military are able to go hit that reset button and redefine where they go outside of it or afterwards. So that's appealing. And I agree, it does give you that exposure of just getting familiar with things. The JD MBA program is interesting because you essentially shave off a year of education. Rather than doing two of them separately together, you save that 1 year. But like you said, there is that opportunity cost of the time. Was there a question of like not knowing whether you wanted to do law or business, and so this was a means to narrow that down?
Yes, okay. Totally. So it was a factor of you don't know what you don't know. Yeah. Two is thankfully Stanford has a great program on both sides. And so take advantage of that. I'm glad. I mean, I did a law firm summer job, summer associate gig, worked at a big law firm, got to see what that was like, got to work at Microsoft one summer in their office division. So got to see what big tech was like, worked at a venture firm, Enterprise Ignition Ventures, an enterprise focused venture fund one summer. That was great. And so the benefit of 4 years is three internships and really getting to, as I like to tell veterans that are transitioning, you should look at all your options and then gradually close the doors and start focusing. But at least do yourself the justice to figure out what it is you might like to do and want to do. And so being able to try out different uniforms, so to speak, in the civilian world was and is a huge luxury. It's just because my only identity leaving the military was West Point in the Army. And now I can say superficially, very superficially, that I know what certain industries are like. But and I've settled on something that right now feels like a good fit.
How, you know, I think the internship thing is fascinating because I agree it was such a great way to get a taste of the life, the hours, the people, in the same way that the summers at the service academies, you're able to get a taste of the different groups and, you know, you can kind of judge based on that whether or not you want to know more about it. Do you have a sense for, especially if someone's not going to grad school, what time feels appropriate? Like if they were to volunteer or offer to work at a place just to get that taste, just based on your internships, after how many weeks or months did you feel like you had confidence of like yes or no on something?
That's a tough question. And let me try to throw out some bullet point thoughts.
Yeah.
I think it's really important. So having internships is a great thing, but just like everything in life, like you have to be really diligent and thoughtful about those internships. So you shouldn't do it unless like you're very serious, obviously, about doing that for a career. So I wasn't going into these internships thinking, you know, it's just like, nice to do. It's more like I really can see myself doing this and researching a buku amount on like what that lifestyle is about. And you have to just because like the interview process, right? So like regardless of where you go, at least for a typical MBA or law school internship, you have to interview like 7 to 10 people. And it's a process, right? And so it's important to know about like that process involved and to know the industry. But I think once you're actually there, 60 to 90 days, and then like another 30 days of really thoughtful introspection about what are the pros and cons. If I talked to myself, what, like 6-7 years ago as I was transitioning out of the military, and I told myself to fall in line, I would just like say whatever, you know, that doesn't apply to me. But I'd say money doesn't matter. Of course you need money to pay the bills. Of course you need money for your family. Of course you need to put food on the table. But at a certain level, and because life is so long, you gotta figure out what it is you like to do and enjoy doing and being around the people you like. And so in the long run, it really makes sense to be happy with your job because it takes so much of your life, time out of your life. And so getting a high-paying, great job with a great title at a great firm, it's fantastic, full stop, right? But is that the lifestyle you want? And does it get you to your next step? You know, is that part of your 10-year, 20-year plan? And if you don't have a 10-year, 20-year plan like myself, then at least does it, you know, match up with the 3 to 5 year plan?
I think that's great. It does seem like when I talk to people on active duty, the question they always want to know is how much money can I make? And that's like I get that that's the most quantitative, easy to define thing. But I agree with you that it ignores so many other factors like job satisfaction and the fit of the people and the location and the lifestyle and the hours and travel. And there's so many different components that to just hone in on the dollar amount, it overlooks the importance of so many other factors.
Yeah, I think too. It's just everything in life is what is it? Process dependent, right? Like the path you take determines your next path, and so actually, I think this is another good thing for veterans to do is look at the veterans who have gone different career routes and see where did they end up and see how did they end up that way. And there's always a story, and there's always a human story. Without overstating this, it really matters like who you spend your time with and who you associate yourself with, because those are the people that will give you the opportunities, and those are the people who might not give you the opportunities.
I agree. It made me think of one of the professors at Stanford Business School, Joel Peterson, and I apologize if I butcher the quote, but he had said, and it stuck with me, that you maximize your earning potential between age 40 and 50. And so his view was like, if you're looking strictly at financials, everything leading up to that is just building out experiences and stepping stones so that when you're in that time range, you just crush it. And I think that removes a little bit of the pressure where, you know, especially the guys and girls that get out at 27 years old, there's that sense of like to get in and to start making money and to start building that experience. But it's like, man, you've got 13 years of experience to build out different functional skills or industries or knowledge and just really solidifying that until then you're powerhousing from the financial standpoint.
Totally. And maybe your 40s and 50s and 60s, maybe financial isn't that important. I mean, again, like financial is important because like you want to have a vacation, you want to have food on the table, but maybe that I guess like without being too hippie or too kind of like 70-ish, you like people ultimately need to decide what success is for them, right? Because like we can live our lives by what other people will ascribe value to you, but it's just so difficult to live life like that, to be like, you know, like my, you know, people, you know, and it's also really you ultimately fail. Like I will not be as successful as a lot of people, and that's fine. A lot of my classmates, West Point, MBA, you know, they're already doing better than me, and I'm fine with that. You just have to have your own success metrics, and be content with it.
Oh, you're speaking my language. I know we're both in California, so maybe that's it, or maybe it's the Stanford roots. But I agree that. At some point you see that, or for I'll just speak for myself, at some point I realize I'm chasing after a ball that everyone else is chasing after. And then it's like, is this really matter to me? And it's liberating when you realize like, actually what I want looks like this, something completely different. And others might not envy that, but I know I'll be happy doing that. And so I think the degree to which you're able to know yourself and know what you want, it's liberating. It's still challenging to achieve that, but at least you're not. And I felt like that even in business school. I remember the first set of internships when everyone was trying to go for investment banking and consulting and all these things. And at some point you're like, I would never want to do this. You know, like for me, investment banking, it's like pulling myself back. I'm like, wow, I actually don't want to do that. It's just everyone is doing it. And it's hard to not feel like you're going after that. And I think that applies in every career move.
Yeah. And I think there's some sites I saw where like, they look at earning per actual like time spent on job, and so like a lot of things are almost the same in life. Like you could spend a lot of hours and making a lot of money, or you can spend a little bit less hours and make less money. I encourage veterans to look at the totality of life experience.
Yeah, no, I think that's great, and that leads into the next thing I wanted to talk about, So when you were in school, you started the program Service to School. And the way I understand this is it's a nonprofit. It provides free application assistance to transitioning veterans applying to college and graduate schools, which I think is an incredible, worthwhile cause. And I want to ask you a lot of questions about your experience there. But I guess before we dive into that, I just love to learn about what motivated you to start that, and what that was like starting this organization.
Sure. I'm distancing myself from the political connotation, but there's a book called It Takes a Village, and it takes a village for like everything, right? It takes a village, it takes a family to raise a good kid. It takes a good team to have a good organization. And so Service to School it took a good team. So that's Gus Jockerman, Khalil Tawil, Anna Ivy, Beth Morgan, and the hundreds of other ambassadors / mentors. And so Service to School came about because myself and other veterans, Gus, Khalil, many others, kind of stumbled into grad school, as in like, okay, I did it because I had, you know, tiger parents, so to speak. Gus did it because he was like, yeah, it makes sense, because, you know, he was reading Forbes or Fortune while he was a captain in the Army. Khalil did it because, you know, he heard some other junior officers do it too. And so we all stumbled into it and got lucky. And so we're like, we should systematize the process, and not just for JMOs, because West Pointers / Naval Academy guys, ROTC, Ivy Leaguers, generally have the wherewithal and background and foundation to be able to make that transition. But for many enlisted, that transition process is very, very difficult. They don't have a guidance counselor. They haven't gone to undergrad. And so the whole premise is to really help veterans with that transition. And it was amazing because many of us had the post 9/11 GI Bill, which made school much less to completely inexpensive. And so that's the premise of the organization. Now it's run full time by Beth Morgan, our executive director. She's fantastic. It's run through her. And so she's the brains and heart of the organization. But really, we're dependent on ambassadors / mentors. And so these are folks. I like to joke, it's a positive Ponzi scheme. We help someone, and in subsequent years, that person goes and helps other people. And it works well. I think there are, and that's how we keep our organization fresh and young. New people come in every year. They have new ideas. They want to contribute in different ways. And the struggle we have is just trying to figure out ways to continually get those new people, new ambassadors, new applicants further connected beyond just being an ambassador. But I've been blessed because it's been a great community to be a part of. We like to say you come for the tool, which is to help get into a school, and then you stay for the community. And so now there are a lot of folks who are at LinkedIn, Facebook, BCG, McKinsey, great companies. And as veterans now are thinking, you know, so veterans can now talk to ambassadors, mentors, and say, not just, would you go to the MBA program? Which MBA program would you go to? But how did you think about career options? And so I think we're doing a good job, and we want to really increase the ability to help more veterans. So hopefully this year we'll expand it even more. The one of our major initiatives is a program called VetLink. So VetLink is where we partner with the top undergrad institutions. So this is a formal partnership with Yale, MIT, Smith, Williams, Cornell, Princeton, Notre Dame, and Amherst. So we're partnering with all those admission offices to help them increase their veteran enrollment. And we went through our first year. It went really well. Everyone's coming. All those schools are coming back for their second year. We want to really boost veteran enrollment at undergrad schools. We truly believe that some of the veterans that we help will be the future Senator McCain's, the folks that will be leading our country in the future. And so I consider myself blessed to be part of the team.
Oh, man, this is awesome. It's really, it's really inspiring to hear you talk about this. I think it's such a... it's such a deserving group of people, and it's such a great assistance that you're giving them. And I was wondering, so how would it work? If I was if I'm transitioning and I'm deciding to go to undergraduate or grad school and I reach out to service to school, what's the basic process look like?
Sure. So let me answer that question and then let me go on my tangent. So you sign up on our website, and when you sign up on our website, you'll get an email asking you for what's your background, how many years have you spent in the military, what branch of service, what schools are you looking at, have you taken a standardized test score, just to see where you are in the process. And then we pair you, and so we have ops leads for undergrad. Our ops leads for undergrad, and I want to give a shout out to them, is Stephen Fraser, who just got admitted into Dartmouth. So he'll be a Dartmouth freshman. And there's a Dartmouth senior, Alex Shivers. Alex Shivers is a Army. He was Army Ranger enlisted. He just completed a summer internship at Perwella Weinberg Partners, a boutique investment banking firm in New York City, and got an offer. Those two guys are leading our undergrad ops. They look at your application / what you submit online, and they pair you with someone from your background. So if you're a Navy enlisted woman from the East Coast looking at an East Coast school, they look at the ambassadors and say, these are the folks that we should pair you up with. And then they, just like every, like, two-way e-intro, they first hit up the ambassador to see if he or she's available, and then if they are, and then we pair them. And so that's some of the nuts and bolts. We also have this enlisted guidebook on our website. It's like 45 pages. A lot of the admission officers that we paired with have looked at it and have been like, this is superb kind of guidance. And so we really push people to look at that that documentation / best practices, because it's just going to save them a lot of time as to comparing community college versus state schools versus for-profit schools, tells them how to think about their letters of application. And at a high level, service to school helps veterans with this methodology called TRAIN. And we're vets, so we love acronyms. So in order to get into the best school possible for you and to hit your potential, we're not saying the best school, right? Because like not everyone wants to go to a best school or has the ability to do so. But in order to get into to hit your potential, you have to train. And TRAIN stands for test prep, resume review, application and essay assistance, interviewing, and networking. And so service to school, our goal was to help you train to get into a good school.
Oh, man, that's great. I mean, literally, as you were listing all of those off, I'm like, yep, that is absolutely every component you would need. Regardless of school you're applying to, you're going to need that. You're going to need the test preparation, the resume help. I think that's exceptional that you've got this program in place. And I love even that because the audience is military, you can feed it to them in a way that is going to the way that they're used to from the military, which is great.
Totally. The program is very decentralized, right? And so, like, there are ambassadors that I have no idea who their names are, and there are applicants I have no idea, right? We're at the hundreds, thousands, and so the program only works if people want to give back, and people want to continually give back, and so I think it works, and so far it has proven to be true that it works because veterans want to help other veterans, and there's this. I like to say service is in our DNA, and that you want to be a team leader and you want to guide other veterans. And there's intrinsic and extrinsic benefits to being a mentor.
You know, what I love about that, too, is that if someone reaches out to me for advice about business school, I'm happy to talk about Stanford. But it's, you know, the moment they start talking about other schools, it's like you need to talk to someone else there, because I don't know that culture and that school and what's different. It's a different flavor. And it's even to the point now where almost 5 years out of Stanford, where it's like, you know, it'd be better to talk to someone who's fresher. And what I love about the way that you've built this is that it continues to evolve, because I imagine even for every school, it will change every couple of years. And I really love that aspect of pairing people with someone with their background. And that's, you know, when I applied to Stanford, I connected with another submarine guy, and it was very helpful to talk to someone who had been in my shoes. And so to be able to do that at scale for every branch of the military and every pay grade, that's really, really smart.
I think everything you said is completely true. There are folks now who are like, oh, you know, I saw an article about you and like, I'd love to talk to you about Stanford. I'm just like, I've graduated 2 years ago. I applied 6 years ago. Like, my knowledge isn't fresh. Like, you should talk to David Lee, who's actually our head of MBA ops. He's a Marine. He's going to Stanford in the fall. He's actually deployed. He's deployed to the Middle East, and he's running our ops for MBA stuff. Or Katie. Like, Katie is a West Point grad. She's an MBA 2 at Chicago Booth. It's a team effort, and I at this point in time, I mean, the ops leads are really lead the charge, and the other thing I want to say about services school, and I'm actually surprised most nonprofits don't do this more, but like, the everything is a community, in order to run an organization, you need funding. And we are a very bare bones operation, and we want to be very frugal and thoughtful about how funding is done, just because there are a lot of veteran organizations that have been exposed and that are just not the best at ROI in terms of social benefit, and so some of our donors are older generation of veterans, Vietnam era veterans. And when I talk to them, they're like, I wish you were around when I was there. And so I point this out because it's a community. I owe a lot of things to previous generation of veterans. And I just want to call them out because I think the next – we owe this to you know, veterans – now and in the future, but we do that because other veterans have helped us.
Mm, I agree. I think that pay it forward mentality is great, and I agree that it's I think one thing amazing about the military community is that willingness to continue to pay forward what's been received. I'm curious. You know, I mean, my biggest takeaway so far is anyone in the military thinking of going to any school to start their search at service to school. So I think that's like the broad disclaimer. But I'm also curious, because you've probably worked with and seen so many different types of veterans, if anything comes to mind in terms of most common mistakes or misconceptions that active duty military personnel make when they're making that transition or when they're considering going to school.
Sure. So I'll start from the enlisted side. Which I think is the most important side, just because there's vast majority of enlisted over officers, and that's where the greatest social impact can be made. So for enlisted, we think very highly of community colleges. We think it's a great breeding ground for further advancement. One, it doesn't cost much. Two, you probably don't have to use your GI Bill there because it doesn't cost much. You'll get acculturated in a nice transition process, in that, like, it's not, you're not suddenly, it's the minor leagues for school, and it's the minor leagues for kind of civilian transition. So you still have a lot of autonomy. You can grow your hair out. You can go to school and be a student, and the studies won't be as intense, and you can gradually become a civilian again. And then from there, you can learn about a lot of the other opportunities, whether it's a 4-year program, whether it's other jobs, and maybe do a job on the side where you're while you're at school. We are big fans of community college programs. We find that a lot of our veterans who go to community college have very realistic expectations and also are armed with a better understanding of what's out there and get actually motivated. So big fans of that. On the enlisted side, I think actually this applies to all veterans. There's a rush, and I referenced this earlier, to want to go get a job as soon as possible. Right? It's like, I'm a breadwinner. I need to support my family, and there's a comfort of a monthly salary, and it's a dangerous thought because it's tactically the optimal decision, but strategically probably not the best, because having an education and getting that transition, the education and that transition component are very important. If you transition directly, it can be very rough. You might not have a community, you might not have a network, you might feel, especially coming from, you know, a base like Fort Lewis or Fort Bragg, suddenly in the middle, you know, the country with no other veteran around you, that transition is super difficult. So finding, so school can both help you with that acculturation transition to a civilian life and change a civilian job, and also give you the skills and education to hopefully land a job that is hopefully more meaningful and provides more career opportunities down the road.
That's interesting, because I always think about school in terms of the almost the academic side of being exposed to the industries and possibilities and learning the language and building a skill set. But what you said resonates in terms, and even for me going to grad school, of establishing a community. And I don't think I realized until years later that, yes, of course, when I was on submarines, I was so used to having a tight wardroom, a tight crew, a tight group of people. We did everything together. It was just a built-in family. And then you're left and you're, you know, on your own in so many ways. And so I like that thought of using, whether it's undergrad or grad school, as a community to establish those ties and to start building those friendships and having those social connections that make that transition so much easier on the personal side.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah, so I guess that's just some general guidance.
Yeah. I cut you off, though. You were about to say something else? Or
No. I wasn't.
Okay. What about when people are getting out of active duty, any thoughts or advice on choosing whether or not to pursue undergraduate or advanced work and deciding? And you spoke to that about jumping straight into the job, but any other thoughts on how someone might one, determine if they're going to pursue that, and then two, especially on the graduate side, figuring out which potential avenue to pursue?
Great question. And so I'm going to, I'm not a stranger to controversy or feeling or expressing my thoughts. I generally tell veterans that an MBA is a place to their strengths. I generally tell them not to go to law school, and some people I know on the law school side, whether it's teachers, professors, admission officers, are dismayed to hear that. But just veterans are a, as they like to say in baseball, like a five-tool player. Like, we can do a lot of things. We're disciplined. We can lead. We've been in difficult situations. We are exposed to different ethnicities. We're generalists. We're generalists in many ways, just because of our exposure and education. And so an MBA really plays to our suits, because it's leadership. It's you learn accounting, finance, management, negotiation. As I like to say, going to get an MBA, you get a Swiss Army knife in your pocket, right? You can do a lot of things, and you can't do like all of them great, but you can be MacGyverish in your situations. But with a law school degree, it's a saber. It does one thing very well, and that is prepare you for a legal career. And that means either working at a nonprofit or working at a big law firm. And so those options are very limited. And yes, a lot of people say you can do a lot of things with a legal career, but a lot of the individuals they highlight are the outliers. And for that reason, I strongly encourage veterans to look at MBA programs. Again, if you know you want to be a practicing lawyer, by all means, do it, right? That's what you know you want to do. But for those who are uncertain and surveying the landscape, my gut is, especially for officers, now I'm talking, and looking at advanced degrees, an MBA is really helpful.
And I guess part of that is that I'm imagining most active duty personnel don't have an idea what they want to do. So to declare so prematurely, I'm going to go into law industry, is very narrowing. Whereas you have a lot more options with business school, and you're able to kind of explore. Do you have any thoughts on more of like the executive program versus full time, or the different types of programs out there?
Sure. So, before I answer that question, also the reason MBA, I like the MBA more, is it's more of a community and it's more of a network.
Yep.
You go to law school and it's like, it can be a very individual experience depending on your school. But generally speaking, it's you are on your own to study for the exam you take by yourself, to get to a job that's going to be by yourself. And 5 years down the road, it's going to be you and yourself. Whereas the MBA program, and I can't say this enough, on a daily basis, I leverage my MBA network, and they are helpful. They're friendly. They understand that life is long, and there's a and everything is karma. And so, like, you help people when you can, and it's a very different kind of viewpoint on relationships. It's not a transactional nature. It's just relationships are much more fluid. The education is important, but the community and transition is just as important. Now to your question around executive MBA versus MBA. If you're on the younger side, I highly encourage MBA because it's a 2-year program. The executive MBA, if you don't have a choice, then that's a good option. I generally think for veterans who are transitioning around the 5 to 8 to 10 year mark, that the 2-year MBA program is nice because you get that one summer to do an internship, if not two. You can maybe do another internship during your last year at school, and you just get more well-rounded, and you get to, again, survey the land a bit more and close doors. The thing in life is you never want, you know, they always say this, there's motivational quotes, but like, you don't, what is that? There's a quote, like, you miss 1,000 shots you don't take. And so, like, if you don't want to be like, oh, I could have been a great investment banker, I could have been a great consultant. Well, MBA gives you at least the chance and time to really understand what that job is and to think whether or not you would be good.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And I know we have a little bit of time left here, but I was curious because you had so much experience with all the different internships, and quite a few of those were with venture capital. And I haven't spoken yet with anyone who's done venture capital. So I was wondering, for a military audience, if you'd explain what venture capital, what that industry is, and what your experience was like on a day-to-day basis working at a VC fund.
Sure. So, let me peel this in several ways. I consulted for Morgan Thaler Ventures, Canvas Ventures. I did a summer internship at Ignition Ventures, which is an enterprise-focused fund, as I mentioned earlier. And then I did a fair bit of consulting for Axel Springer Digital Ventures. What venture capital is they invest in startups. They can invest really early on when it's just two people in a garage. So angel money, $50K, $100K, $150K to big checks, millions of dollars at a later stage. Either way, though, it's usually quote unquote patient money, which is I try not to get into the guts of venture capital, but basically they expect their return to come back 3 to 10 years down the road. And they try to take a sizable stake in the company. So, if someone's investing at an A round, they try to take A round, typically maybe $2 to $10 million. They want to take about 20% of the company. So when the company either gets acquired or exits with an IPO, the investors then get their money back and their percent back based off that acquisition price or IPO. And what interested me about venture capital is I'm a big fan of entrepreneurialism, and technology. And so it seemed really, really fascinating and really interesting. And I'm really glad I had those internships. It gave me one is it gives you a high level view of entrepreneurship, like who the entrepreneurs are, how they're driven, what problems are they attacking, and how are they going about it. And so that's awesome. Two is because of that, you get a pretty good network. You learn, you get to meet great people and connect with them and understand how they're tackling these things. But I didn't go venture capital, at least full time, right? I spent a long time consulting with Axel Springer Digital Ventures, but didn't go full time. And I'm actually glad because being on the operational side, you learn so much about what it takes to build a business. And like, I can't say, I mean, again, like, I classify myself as someone who is still very much trying to learn how the world works. So by no means do I have, you know, any, by no means should someone just take my advice, right? I'm an N equals one. You should go and talk to a lot of people because someone else is going to say Tim is an idiot. Tim is a complete jerk. Don't listen to what he says. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And they're right. But I would say, working on the operational side since graduation has been really good. You learn about ops, you learn about marketing, you learn about sales, and you learn about what it takes to build a company, what it takes to close a deal. And there are veterans in venture capital, and they are quite successful. But the path to these days for most venture capital firms is being an entrepreneur, having operator experience, and then becoming an investor. There are some who go straight on the investing side, but more and more entrepreneurs like to see investors who have that experience because they know that you've lived that world.
Mm. That's great. That was one of the things I was going to ask about, is that what is the career path to get there? And it does seem like more and more they want to find people who have been an entrepreneur and know that day to day and have that operational experience. And to your point, I think that's one area where the military does give you a little bit more experience is operational experience. Now, not startup operational experience, but at least kind of running project management, keeping things going, managing a team, and then it's filling out some of the functional size necessary to run a startup. But it is a good head start.
Mm-hmm.
What about just in the time we have left here? Putting yourself back in the shoes when you went to law school and business school, what was the most surprising thing of that transition? Like, what did you not realize when you were on active duty that you experienced when you were a civilian?
So looking back, I'd say grad school and maybe life in general, maybe I'm getting too meta, is like that time sand clock where like the sand is like trickling down, and like things every day, like a little change happens, and that every day builds up to be a mountain of sand, and you're just like, wow, like I've changed a lot. And it might not seem a lot each day or each month, but the changes have been made, and it's irrevocable. And as in, like, the vocabulary you learn, the ability, your friendships, the knowledge, it builds on top of itself, and it's very slow. And people expect change to happen very fast, and sure, change happens, you know, quote unquote fast, disruption quote unquote happens fast in the Valley and tech, but it actually doesn't happen that fast. I mean, like, it takes still days and patience and follow through. And so I think that, like, my transition from veteran to civilian was a very gradual process. And I'm still probably transitioning, but it takes time, and you can't rush good things sometimes. And so I think it's about the vocabulary. It's about being responsible for your own decisions, and not there's no hierarchy. I'm kind of rambling now, but I think those are my top level points.
Yeah, no, I agree. It is surprising to me, and even as you said, I think there's still ways in which I'm making that transition. I don't think I realized that until you said it, but I think that's very apt. And I think it's starting to unpack like the many ways, favorably, negatively, and just neutral, so many different ways that whether it was, you know, 4 years, 9 years, 10 years in this military environment, that really shapes a lot of the way we view the world, a lot of the way we interact with others, a lot of the ways that we view ourselves. And I completely echo what you're saying. In my case, I think it's kind of realizing, like, wow, like that has a tremendous impact, and it's not even necessarily good or bad, but it's understanding that most veterans will view the world differently than civilians, and to start to understand the ways in which our viewpoint is different, and then you can start to see the other ways of looking at things. But I think that was very well put, the way you explained that.
I think interview me 10 years from now, I'm going to be a completely different person.
Yeah.
And it's not because, like, I changed over a span of 6 months. It's because the changes are so insubstantial on a monthly basis, but like, it's just going to be big. And the reason I say that is, 10 years ago, I'm completely different than I was 10 years ago in terms of a lieutenant in the Army, thinking I wanted to make the military career. What did I know, right?
Oh, man. Well, this is great. I think so service to school is awesome. I'm going to put in the notes for the show, I'll put links to service to school, I'll put links to all the organizations you mentioned. So if people are curious, they can go there, they can get more information. And I have the sense that we just kind of scraped the surface here on the potential of things we could talk about, but really excited to have heard about more about the service to school and how you are helping a lot of veterans make that transition. So thank you for your time on all this.
Thanks, Justin. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, that is all for this week. A couple quick admin items. There is data, additional interviews, and additional free resources all at beyondtheuniform.io. Show notes will reference links to anything the interviewee mentioned in their interview that might be valuable, so save you the time. It will also give you an overview of the interview if you want to go back and listen to particular portions. There's the different timestamps, so you can go there and save yourself some time. If you have recommendations for how to make this show more useful, please drop me a note at beyondtheuniform.io. I'd love to hear from you. Would love the recommendations, particularly if you're on active duty. It's been 10 years now. I'm a little distanced, so let me know what ammo I can be providing to you to help in that transition. Thanks, and see you next week.